time thereof.
It happened in the springtime of the year of 64, when Englishmen were making pounds and fivers by the score. He beat them on the hollows, he beat them on the jumps. A pair of fancy fetlocks, well, he showed them all the bumps. He's English, English as you've seen. A little bit of Arab stock and more from Stephen's Green. Take a look at Millhouse, blow out your chest with pride. He's the greatest steeplechaser on the English countryside.
The brilliantly comic song Arkle, written and performed by Dominic Behan, a witty homage to the champion thoroughbred horse and his three-time victory at Cheltenham. I'm Therese McIntyre, and in this, our final episode of Hero Songs, I'm exploring songs of sporting heroes, from the great racehorse Arkle to the champion greyhound Master McGrath.
1869 been the date of the year, those Waterloo sportsmen and more did appear, or to gain the great prizes and bear them awry. Never counting on Ireland and Master McGrath.
The Clancy brothers with Master McGrath, our canine hero. And then we have the prize-winning bare-knuckle boxer, Johnny Morrissey, whose life story reads like a Hollywood script and who is celebrated in the ballad Morrissey and the Russian Sailor.
Let tell about a battle that took place the other day between a Russian sailor and gallant Morrissey. Twas in Teradelfo ego.
Shan no singer Shosu Vulcheni with the Morrissey fight, as it says in Tierra del Fuego. Now, in our series, we've crossed from outlaws to lost leaders, failed revolutionaries to nation-building poets. But for this final journey, the battles are in the ring, on the track, or in the sports arena. Yet the hyperbole and drama are the same, perhaps because, next to politics, sport engenders the most human passion, as veteran sports commentator and music lover Jimmy McGee told me.
Sport is, for a start, is good. It's clean, it's neat, it's tidy. And we've always been rather good at it. And we love singing. So we've always had an interest in music. And when we come across an heroic figure in sport, actually, that makes it. We make heroes. We actually make heroes. Our greatest manufacturing outlet in this world is our factory, which makes heroes. And all we need is a small smidgen of fact, and we're away with the heroic factory.
1869 being the date and the year, those Waterloo sportsmen and more did appear. But again, the great prizes and the bear, the mama, they were counting on Ireland and Master McGrath.
And we're listening to Ronnie Drew and the almost mythical story of the dog Master McGrath, the Irish champion greyhound who won the Waterloo Cup three times in the mid-19th century.
Channel, it soon drove them o'er. On the 13th, they landed on England's fair shore.
Here's Jimmy McGee on how a dog became a legend.
Well, the unmistakable voice of the late Ronnie Drew is the story of the Waterloo Cup, which was the dog race to win at the time. Famous coursing race. Not like the dogs, because it was before greyhound racing as we know it now, which only dates from the 1920s. But as Ronnie says there in the first line of the song, he tells you the when and the where. And the Waterloo Cup was outside Liverpool, and it's kind of in that direction. And there was McGrath going over the Master to try and lift this big prize. And of course, you can't go over easy. There has to be a storm and a bit of drama, a storm, and the boss's boat is tossed around and everybody has a jar. But do you think that puts them off? Not at all. They arrive there in the clean up. But basically, it's the story of the dog going over and cleaning England out.
Then McGrath, he looked up and he wagged his owl tail. Informing his lordship, sure I know what you mean. Don't fear noble Brownlow, don't fear the McGrath. We'll soon tarnish their laurels, says Master McGrath.
Mike Cronin at Boston College Dublin sees the dog taking on the mantle of Ireland in the song.
I think he fits into a social context there where we're somewhere in a gulf between the emergence of an avowedly pronounced home rule movement that will kick in a few years later. But we've emerged from the years of the famine, the Young Ireland Rebellion and other kind of acts of sedition against Britain, as they would see it. And I think it's that kind of idea where we're in a moment where symbols of Irishness, particularly at the political level, are still emerging. Therefore, people are putting their kind of identities, their notions of what Ireland might be, into this idea of a dog. And again, I think that's the idea more generally where sporting heroes become important, is it's when the larger population can see something in them which is not just sporting excellence, but where they become symbolic of some wider theme. So for McGrath, it's the nation. And I think that's why He the Dog is very popular, but I think that's also why the song is so long-standing.
According to law, but the second was given by Master McGrath.
Master McGrath is attributed to Henry McCusker of Lurgan, appropriately as the dog was owned by Lord Lurgan.
Then Lord Lurgan stepped forward, he said, "Gentlemen, if there's any among you has money to spend..."
Fergus Russell, who sings with the Galway Traditional Singers Club, remembers hearing the Dominic Behan version in the 1960s, when it took on a sharply political context.
There was a lot of national fervour around with 1966, 50th anniversary of 1916 rising, and there was a lot of national pride, and it was one song that sort of demonstrated a national pride about a small nation beating a bigger nation, or in this instance, a small dog beating the cream of British greyhounds. It was taken over in the 70s and 80s and 90s during the trouble and became more nationalist in the Gaelic. We sort of didn't sing songs that were associated with the troubles or with republicanism, because we felt that they had been hijacked by the republican movement, and so it wasn't sung there for a long time. But now a lot of those songs are being reclaimed. People singing these songs don't have connotations of republicanism in that sense. I like the song because I think it's a very well-written song, and because literally he was the underdog, and I'm sort of inclined to be attracted to songs about the underdog, where there's a hero who, against all the odds, rises to the challenge. So Master McGrath didn't live long after he won his races. He went to stud, which he wasn't very good at, and he died a couple of years later. And when they did an autopsy on him, they found that his heart was twice the size of a normal greyhound's. That's where he was able to get the power and the speed and the endurance, even though his stride was much shorter than a normal greyhound. He had the power and he had the speed because he had this big engine of a heart driving him along.
The hare she led on with a wonderful view, and as swift as the wind o'er the green field she flew. But he jumped on her back and he held up his paw. "Three cheers for old Ireland," says Master McGrath.
So many of our sporting heroes gain their heroic status, as Fergus Russell says, by being the underdog, winning against the odds, and particularly for beating, as Master McGrath did, the English. So the sporting hero in the ballad becomes shorthand for Ireland and Irish identity.
"I will sing about a battle that took place the other day between a Russian sailor and Johnny Morrissey."
Morrissey and the Russian Sailor, as sung by Frank Hart with Donal Lunny. The song is about Tipperary man Johnny Morrissey, an Irish bare-knuckle boxer who became a celebrity prize fighter in 19th century America and later a politician. His life story parallels the violent Irish gangland world of Scorsese's film Gangs of New York.
"Two bucks on my boy.
But who was Morrissey, and why did he become a hero? Here's Mike Cronin.
"With heart both brave and true."
Johnny Morrissey was from Tipperary. He moved as a young child to New York, where, like many Irish, he's living in less than salubrious surroundings. He's poor and drifts into a kind of life of minor crime, as far as we know, early on. He then takes his chances of moving out to San Francisco. The gold rush is on. He goes out to seek his fortune. Not sure that he ever found any gold, but it's clear that what he did do when he was in San Francisco, he became a very adept gambler. So he emerges as somebody who makes a degree of wealth as a gambler, but then also gets sucked into the world of prize fighting, which is kind of one of the dominant sporting forms of the period. I mean, we are talking about the 1850s. Prize fighting has emerged as something which is, it's a conduit for gambling. It's something that's very violent, but it's something that's also kind of governed by some of sport's first rules. And to a degree, he becomes, especially with that Irish-American community he emerges from, he becomes a popular hero. He goes on and becomes involved in gang politics in the streets of New York, and we can think of the film here, Gangs of New York, is very kind of reminiscent of that whole era, where he's basically employed simply by the Democratic Party to ensure that vote rigging doesn't go on. And eventually ends up going fully respectable and is elected to Congress. where he serves between 1867 and 1871. Finally died in 1878 with an estimated wealth of $2 million. Has gone through this sort of Irish-American slums of New York. Has embraced a kind of violent world of boxing, and yet through all those connections actually managed to build a kind of very respectable wealth. So he's a fascinating character.
Round with Shamrock's green for $60,000, as you may plainly see, was to be the champion's prize for him who'd gained a victory.
But while, as Mike Cronin says, we know a lot about Morrissey and his life, how true was the song itself? I asked Dr. Lillis O'Leary at NUI Galway what he thinks.
Frank Hart always used to say, if you want to get the history of the people, you have to go to the songs. I suppose songs are never impartial. They always have a point of view.
For a minute and a half he lay before that he could rise.
Interestingly, we have no factual record of that fight. Now, it seems just to be a very ordinary fight between a Russian and an Irishman. But the backers of the Russian are Yankees. Now, the Yankees were the New Englanders. They were really against the Irish Catholics coming in. And so there's that tension is there. So Morrissey is standing for the Irish underdog in that song in a way that's not immediately apparent. But when you look at the symbols that are used in the song, you can see that Irish nationalism, Irish identity, Irish feelings of being downtrodden are very, very strongly represented.
Come all you gallant Irishmen, wherever you may be, I hope you'll pay attention and listen unto me. I'll sing about a battle that took place the other day between a Russian sailor and gallant Morrissey.
Lillis first heard the song sung by Johnny McDonough, as recorded by Alan Lomax in 1951.
Here you are, a fighting man, and wear a belt I see. Indeed, I wish you would consent to have a round with me.
I have to say that recording of Morrissey is one of the most memorable recordings that anyone will listen to, and I recommend it highly because of the absolute joie de vivre. There's just this whooping right throughout the song, and they're just really enjoying the fight. It's almost like they're seeing it in front of their two eyes.
At the Irish Traditional Music Archive, Grace Toland found me a copy of the original broadsheet of the Morrissey Ballad, and the match with the boxer known only as the Russian.
Yeah, we're looking at one of the many ballad sheets that we have in the Irish Traditional Music Archive about this fight that took place. The ballad sheet itself, this one was printed by Brereton, who was a Dublin ballad sheet printer. And this would have circulated round Ireland at fairs and at different events, bringing home the news of this wonderful victory by John Morrissey. And it's very much of the genre of the song, Come All Ye Sons of Erin's Isle, Your Attention Now I Crave. And that's a very much a similar line. Where it's a news calling line. So, you know, I want your attention. I'm going to tell you a story. It's very appealing to the Irish because of their interest in the sport of boxing and in the fact that you've beaten someone from another country. And I think it's really interesting that a lot of them do actually name a country. So it's like Ireland against the rest of the world. And I suppose we always keep that. So Katie Taylor did the same thing. We like to think that she's representing us. And I think Morrissey represented the Irish in the 19th century. And the news of that coming back was probably really hopeful for Irish people too. And a good story. Again, we have no idea who wrote the song, but it's quite journalistic. And a lot of the sporting songs tend to be that kind of journalistic type description. So you get a lot of knockdowns in the first round and the second round and what happened. And then there's always the awful bit where the Irish man's lying down and it's all over. And then ding, ding, he's up again. And, you know, he eventually defeats him.
Noble Johnny Morrissey and Paddy's evermore.
What a nerve-wracking time it is here in London. Could you possibly follow in the footsteps of the man who first won the gold medal prize?
Come, all you gallant Irishmen, wherever you may be. I hope you pay attention and listen unto me.
As Grace Toland reminded us, Irish boxer Katie Taylor became a national champion and hero when she won Olympic gold in London 2012, coincidentally also fighting a Russian. And then T.G. Carr's Sean Bon Branagh, in a tearful tribute, connected Katie to a long line of Mná na hÉireann, from Mad Gan to Gran Uail.
Grand your way, Mary Robinson, Maud of Fakati, Cashdach the Lord of the Lord, Shuddy and Van, Tanrusha Hagari, Nidan Ungari Arusha.
In the midst of that emotional win, Irish singer James MacDonald, now living in England, adapted the Morrissey ballad to fit Katie and sang it that night at a folk session.
It was on the 9th of August, those heroes did agree, heroines technically, anyway. And thousands came from every part the battle for to see. The Russians and North Koreans, their hearts were filled with glee, for they thought the Russian lightweight would kill our brave Katie.
I wanted to keep as much of it as possible so that it remained familiar to people who would know the original song, and even to make slight changes which would touch on it being a parody, actually. Some of the things that needed to change were obviously names and places. It was no longer set in Tierra del Fuego in South America, but had moved to the Royal Docklands of London town. Traditional songs really don't do much justice to women. There are plenty of exceptions, but our heroes historically have been men, and of course the songs reflect that. So I think as we try and become a more equal society, hopefully the songs will not only reflect that change towards equality, but will help to push it forwards as well.
Come on now!
The challenge of an ancient game brought glory, glory to your name. Though March winds blew, the crowd still came to watch you, gentle hero.
Cuchulainn's son, the lament to hurler Nicky Rackard, a man often seen as one of the greatest in the game, sung there by Frank Nugent. The song is about the clash of the ash, when Wexford played Cork in the 1956 All-Ireland Hurling Final, and Rackard faced another legendary hurler, Corkman Christy Ring.
Passes across the centre, out comes Nicky Rackard, 21 yards out, take a shot, he takes a shot, it's a goal!
Micheál O'Hare's commentary from 1956. It's where Wexford went on to beat Cork and where Rackard sealed his place in hurling history, winning his second All-Ireland medal.
All-Ireland champions of 1956, are Wexford.
Jimmy McGee was at the final in 56 and got to know Rackard.
The first thing that strikes me about that Wexford team was the size of them. It was a very physically big team. Nearly every man on it was around the 6 foot mark. So they were big. You don't have to be that big to play hurling. And Nicky was the biggest of them. He was a powerful man, really powerful. Big chest, wide shoulders, and just a powerhouse. Like when he took a 21 yard free and hit it with all his power. You need to be a brave man, but they are brave who play that game to stop it. He was loved, obviously loved in Wexford, but he's loved throughout the country.
Frank Nugent himself was just a child, but remembers that game well.
I was 7 years of age and I went to all the matches, obviously the All-Ireland. There were so many went to that match. I was too young to be brought to the match. But all my relations came up. My mother had 8 sisters, my father and mother were Wexford. And all those relations descended on the house the night before the match and the night after the match. They all slept in the house. They were huge men. They were all farmers, were big, big men. And I remember the excitement of the whole thing. So as a youngster, those Wexford hurlers were my stars Like kids today, you'd hear them talk about Man United and all this sort of stuff. And Ned Wheeler, Nick O'Donnell, Artie Foley, they were all my heroes. Tim Flood, they were all great Wexford hurlers, even though I was born and reared in Dublin. But my father and mother, I was steeped in Wexford hurling.
Green fields long ago, the diamond stood beside you. Old friends, they flanked you side by side, and the tears that flowed were tears of pride. Oh, an ash tree toppled when you died, and scattered seed.
It's a great song. The song was written after he died, so it actually tells about his funeral and about the crowd turning up on the march, as they always did for Nicky Rackard when he played hurling. And it remembers September fields, and lightning was your drive. The words in the song, and they're full of the symbolism of the whole thing then, and the business of likening him to the son of Cúchulainn, that links the ancient game to him, and then him being the champion. If you remember, Cúchulainn fought Ferdia, and both of them collapsed, and Ferdia actually died, and Cúchulainn had to be strapped up to a rock to show that he was still alive. He had actually won the battle, but he died later. So with the whole concept of it was, there was two champions who fought to the death. And the last line in the song, an ash tree toppled when you died and scattered seed at random. Now to me, that's, in other words, what you have brought will live on forever, because there's always going to be young hurlers who will want to emulate Nicky Rackard.
Legend of the game of hurling, and this afternoon a statue in honour of Nicky Rackard was unveiled in Wexford. Hundreds of people attended, including three of his grandchildren.
Rare footage from 1956 of one of the greatest ever hurlers, Wexford man Nicky Rackard, who died in 1976, age only 53, after overcoming alcoholism, and he was one of the first sportsmen to publicise the importance of Alcoholics Anonymous.
I think it takes a brave man to come out and say that you're an alcoholic. Well, he did, but he was just big enough to be able to do that. And we loved Nicky even more. A lot of us who loved him were in the same situation. Well, if big Nick Rackard can do it, by God, we can do it too.
The challenge of an ancient game brought glory, glory to your name. Though March winds blew, the crowd still came to watch you, gentle hero.
The song Cúchulainn's Son was written by Tom Williams, who also wrote a biography of Rackard. Frank Nugent first heard the song from Martin Codd, who played alongside Rackard during the 1956 final, and it's his version we're hearing now.
My mother's daughter married Martin Codd, and Martin Codd played in that 1956 All-Ireland. He got 2 points. And he became one of the great singers of this song. He had his own show band in Wexford. And he was a great hurler, a huge man himself. I heard him sing this song many times, but I only learned it after he died, because, you know, it's one of those things. So I wanted to keep the tradition going in the family, if you will.
September fields and lightning was the drive. You were the one, Cúchulainn's son, in 1955.
I don't know where I was when I first heard it, but I was delighted that somebody took the trouble to write a song about such an heroic figure. He was a typical Irish warrior. He had all the ingredients for warriorship, plus all the ingredients of a well-educated man. Put them all together with a physical type, and you have the ultimate hero. That was Nick Rackard from Rathnure St. Anne's.
In a period where, for all the stereotypes of the Irish relationship with drink, people didn't talk about this. So here's this kind of heroic icon who is actually talking about his demons, his dark days, his problem, and how he got through it. And I think that's part and parcel, again, of the kind of the hero story, is Rackard, who had everything, also destroyed much of that through his own relationship with drink, yet recovers, yet talks about it. So it's the idea that people are relating to him as somebody who's human, who's flawed.
What they saw, we watched you on September fields, and lightning was the drive. You were the one, Cúchulainn's son, in 1955.
Mike Cronin and Jimmy McGee on the Nicky Rackard story, with Martin Codd singing Cuchulainn's Son.
It happened in the springtime of the year of 64, when Englishmen were making pounds and fivers by the score.
And they're off, and Milhouse jumps straight into the lead from Parcell, Arkell and King's nephew. And as they come up to the first of the 21 fences, it's Milhouse, the leader, from Parcell, Arkell and King's nephew.
And to close our sporting heroes, a tale of a horse, or horse of a tale. Arkell, probably the most famous steeplechase horse ever. He won the Cheltenham Gold Cup 3 times, and Dominic Bean's song captures the excitement of his classic 1964 win against Milhouse.
In a fantastic race, Pat Taff aboard Arkell, Willie Robinson aboard Milhouse, and Arkell took him near the end and went on to victory. It was the most astonishing, fantastic victory ever known. There were a lot of beautiful stories told about Arkell, not alone in his running, but during his heyday. He used to get fan mail, you know. He used to people send him postcards and love letters. In fact, there was one famous one he got from a boy, a young boy, was sent to the Duchess of Westminster, who owned Arkell, wanting to buy the horse. I'd like to buy Arkell. My dog has just died, and I need a pet, and Arkell is my greatest love and my greatest pet. I have 7 and 6 pence. It's all the money I have, but I'll look after my promise. That sort of thing, that's a wonderful innocence about that, which I think emphasises and confirms the love the nation had for the horse, the love the racing people had for the horse, and the fact that today, whenever there's a good horse, runs at Leopardstown, at Punchestown, at Ferry House, and there are a lot of good ones around now, the knowing ones always say, will it be as good as Arkell? And the equally known ones will always say, there'll never be another Arkell. And I think Dominic Bean knew that when he wrote the song. He hasn't got
the speed. The one and only Jimmy McGee on Arkell, the hero horse, with Dominic Bean's ballad ending not just this episode, but our series, Hero Songs. Thanks a million for listening.
He's passing England's Millhouse, the finest in the land. My God, he has us beaten. What can we English say? The ground was wrong, the distance long, too early in the day.